Your Bible, I want to invite you to turn to the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 14. Gospel of Matthew, chapter 14. We're going to look at a story today, a story that will begin at verse 22. It's a famous story, but it's one I think has application for all of us. So, we're going to call it Ghost on the Water. The first part I call In the Middle of the Storm, beginning in verse 22 and following. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat by this time was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. Jesus had just finished doing the one miracle that's recorded in all four Gospels, the feeding of the 5,000. Now, that's probably not an accurate number because the 5,000 referred to the men, and there were women and children in that group, so it could have been as high as 15 or 20,000 people that he fed using the disciples as servants and ushers. He fed with 5 loaves and 2 fish. That was incredible, an amazing miracle. And it was after he had spent the afternoon healing people of various diseases and teaching the people. The crowds were astonished. The disciples were astonished. Nobody had ever seen anything like that. The Apostle John records in his gospel that some of the people in the crowd wanted to get Jesus right then and declare him to be king and use him to declare independence from the Romans and start a revolution. Well, Jesus will have no part of that. And he was concerned that his disciples might even be caught up in the emotion of the moment. So he made them leave. He ordered them to get into a boat and go across the Lake of Galilee. He told them that he would follow them later on after he dismissed the crowd. I'm sure they were probably reluctant to follow that order. They'd never left their master like this before. But Jesus insisted. They obeyed. All 12 men crowded into a fishing boat and set sail for the other side of the Lake of Galilee, some 4 miles across. It was the second evening. You see, the Jewish had a weird timekeeping that they called 3 o'clock in the afternoon the first evening and around 6 when the sun set the second evening. So this is around the second evening, around 6 in the evening. Jesus blessed the crowd of people with a prayer. He told them to go home. The event was over. The day was over. The sun was setting and he was leaving. But he did not get into a boat and follow after his disciples. Nor did he start walking around the Lake of Galilee to meet them on the other side. That was a long walk if you did it, but it could be done. Instead, Jesus walked up to a nearby mountainside. He found a quiet place to be alone. And there, alone, he started praying. The sun set, night engulfed the horizon. Jesus prayed. It was springtime. That's why there was grass in that place for the people to sit on that afternoon. It was probably the month of April. The moon was full, and the view from that mountainside was very wide. Jesus could see his men in that little boat traveling to the other side of the lake. He could see them from his mountainside. And all was quiet. All was still until it wasn't, until a spring storm blew in. That can happen on Galilee's lake. Cooler Mediterranean air from the west travels in from the coast and gets funneled into through valleys that descend onto the lake. And that cooler air collides with warmer air that is around the Lake of Galilee. And the resulting of cold air and warm air, you know what happens? Storms. And a storm like that began. And this one was a monster storm. It hit hard. Now, several of the men in the boat were lifelong fishermen. They were used to storms. They'd been through them before. And they could handle a boat. They could endure a storm. But this one was rough. This was terrible. It caught them out of the blue. It caught them off guard. And it kept on going. It kept on going on and on. They had to take down their sail. That was completely useless. And they began to row toward the shore on the other side. Jesus told them to go to the other side. They started rowing toward it. But they made no progress. The storm was strong. It seemed to make them be stuck in the middle of the lake. No way to avoid the storm, no way to fight it. Battered, knocked around. Matthew wrote this, and Matthew remembers it because he was there. He was in this storm. And he remembers very vividly this scary night. He and his fishermen fellow disciples felt helpless. None of their boating skills were working. Nothing was working. They were stuck in the middle of the lake, being battered back and forth by waves and wind. I want to point out something. These men were following Jesus' orders. They were being obedient. They were actually right in the middle of God's will. And yet, they were in a fierce storm. Following Jesus had led them into the middle of a storm. There's a message for us in that. That points to the fact that God's people do go through storms. We do. We go through storms in life, storms that may not involve wind and water, but they batter us all the same. They batter us emotionally, physically, financially. They batter us. We do go through unexpected storms in our lives, and sometimes even God's children can feel helpless, just like those 12 men in the boat that night. Warren Wiersbe, one of my favorite commentators, describes God's sovereign purpose with these words, and I quote, he says, as we read our Bibles, we discover that there are two kinds of storms. Storms of correction, when God disciplines us, and storms of perfection, when God helps us grow. Jonah was in a storm because he disobeyed God and had to be corrected. The disciples were in a storm because they obeyed Christ and had to be perfected. You see, Jesus knew his men were going to be in that storm. He knew that when he sent them on. They didn't know it, but he knew it. He knew that there was something important that they were going to have to learn. Now, they had been in a violent storm before. Some months before they had been in a violent storm, Jesus was in the boat. In fact, in Matthew chapter 8, he talks about Jesus was asleep in the boat. And they woke him up. And they said, Lord, don't you care that we're about to perish? Jesus got up, stood up, looked up, and spoke to the storm and said, peace, be still. The wind died down, waves died down, and everything was calm. But Jesus wasn't with them now. He wasn't in this boat. They were all alone. And they would have to learn that because he wasn't there physically didn't mean his power was not there. As they would later on serve as apostles, they'd have to learn to trust his power even when they didn't see his presence. Well, that night there wasn't any faith being displayed. Hour after hour, the storm battered this little boat. Water filled the boat. Tension filled their minds. This was stressful. Little did they know, but another stress was about to appear. Let's continue in our text, verse 25 and following, I call in the middle of fear. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them, walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, it's a ghost! They cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid. In the fourth watch of the night. It's easy to skip over that. The Romans divided the night watch into four sections of 3 hours apiece. And the last watch of the night was between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. So this fourth watch of the night most likely means about 3:00 a.m. Now remember, Jesus had given his disciples the order to get in the boat in the Jewish second evening about 6 p.m. the night before. That means that they've been in this boat battling this storm for 9 hours. 9 hours. 9 hours being battered, splattered with water, beaten by the wind, the boat going backwards and forwards and left and right. After hour, hour after hour, they were battered and they were terrified. Hour after hour, they rode to no avail, only to make no progress. And I'm sure they were saying in their hearts, where's Jesus? I don't see him. Where's Jesus? Jesus, help, where are you? Well, what's going on with that? Remember, Jesus had gone up on the mountainside to pray. Remember, it was springtime and the moon was full and he could see. He could see them. He could see them. What was he doing? He was praying for them. He was praying for them. He was praying that God's grace would go with them. He was praying for their safety, and he was praying that they would learn from this experience. They had to learn that his power was there even when his physical presence was not there. That was a truth that would be invaluable later on. You know, that even speaks to our situation here. The Bible tells us in the book of Romans that Jesus is in heaven making intercession for us. You know what intercession means? It means praying. Praying to the Father. Where are you, Jesus? Praying for you. I'm praying for you. You see, he does care. He does see us. And he's praying God's grace upon us. Well, the physical presence of Jesus was not with these men, but the power of Jesus was there. They didn't feel it. They didn't know it, but it was real. He was with them in a meaningful way. They couldn't see him. All they could see was the raging water. They couldn't feel him. All they could feel was the battering wind. But he was there. His power was there. All of a sudden, his presence was there. In the lightning flashes of the storm, the men began to see a figure that seemed to be gliding across the water, headed straight toward them. And every time the lightning would flash, that figure would come a little closer. And it would flash again, and that figure would come a little closer. And they could make out it looked like the appearance of a man. But it was getting closer and closer. And they thought, this is a ghost. This is a harbinger of death. We're all going to die. They were scared. And then Jesus spoke. He said, take heart. It is I. Don't be afraid. That voice. They recognized that voice. It was Jesus. And he's coming to us. Jesus was showing them that the very thing that they were terrified of, the water, was what he was walking on. It's just a staircase for him. Well, they're in shock. They didn't know what to say. Nobody knew what to say. But then Peter thought of something. So let's move on in our story. Verses 28 and following, I call in the middle of adventure. And Peter answered him, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. He said, come. So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. Peter asked for a miracle. Anybody can sit in the boat and watch. Peter dared to be different. He said, Lord, this sounds like you, but if it really is you, command me to be able to come to you. And what Peter's actually saying is he's asking for a royal command from a king. A royal command. He say, give the royal command that the water will let me stand on it. Give that command, and I'll come to you. And Jesus said, and I'm paraphrasing, well, come on, boy. Come on. And Peter, he began to do it. He lifted up one leg over the rail, put it down in the water, and his foot got wet, but didn't sink in. He's holding on to that rail. He lifted up the other foot, put it down in the water, and he's still holding on to the boat. But he's not sinking in. He let go of one hand. I'm still not sinking in. Let go of the other hand. I'm not sinking in. I'm standing on the water. Man, this is cool. And he looked at Jesus, and he took a small step. He took another baby step. And then he said, Jesus, I'm doing it. Just like a toddler would say, you know, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. One step, then another step. Then Start taking big steps. Oh, man, this is cool. Guys, do you see this? I'm walking on the water. This is great. Until it wasn't. Until he began to feel that wind and look around at those waves. And that's where we come to the next section I call in the middle of doubt. Verses 30 and following. But when he saw the wind, and by the way, you don't see wind, you see what the wind does. So he's looking at the water. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Peter began to notice the water. Couldn't help it. It's waves going all around him. His knees are getting splashed by it, but he was walking on the water. The wind was at his back, whipping it up in a frenzy. The wind was strong. The water was splashing, and Peter got distracted. He took his eyes off Jesus and started looking around. He was gazing at the storm, not at the master. That was his mistake. Suddenly he began to sink. Suddenly the water came up to his knees. Oh, no. Then it came up to his thighs. Oh, no. Then it came up to his chest. Oh, no. And then, boom, he went under. And he began to splash and bob up and down, waving his arms and kicking with his feet. He bobbed his head, and all he could think to do was say, "Lord, save me." It took only a few seconds, but it seemed much longer to him. Jesus calmly walked over to him, reached out his arm, and with those strong carpenter hands, yanked him back up, placed him back on his feet, lifted him up. Peter was shaking. He was cold. He was wet. But Jesus held him steady. Looking directly into Peter's eyes, Jesus said, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" When Matthew records this, he uses a Greek word for doubt that carries the meaning of standing uncertainly at two ways. Standing uncertainly at two ways. Looking back and forth. Two directions. Peter saw two directions instead of one. Perhaps that's what the Apostle James was trying to say when he would write that some people are double-minded. Peter should have kept his eyes just on Jesus. Then he would have walked all the way to Jesus. He would have made it. But he focused on his circumstance. Isn't that what we do as human beings? Focus on our circumstance. And he got fearful. There's a message for us in that. When we look at the darkness of our circumstances, and they can be dark, we get fearful too. God made us as emotional creatures, and we get fearful. It's only by putting our spiritual eyes on Jesus and keeping them there that we can walk in spiritual victory. It's only then we can see that whatever is over our heads is under his feet. Well, Jesus took hold of Peter's arm, and arm in arm, they walked back to the boat. They came to the side of the boat just like they were strolling across a beaten path. Jesus helped Peter climb back into the boat, and then Jesus climbed into the boat. And the moment his foot touched the wooden deck of that boat, the wind died down. And when the wind died down, the waves died down. And within a few minutes, maybe two, that storm that had lasted for 9 hours was over. Now the boat was just gently rocking. Now the other 11 disciples were just looking at Peter and looking at Jesus. They didn't know what to say. But after a few seconds, they found the words. So let's finish our story, verses 32 and following. I call in the middle of wonder. And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Some months before, when they'd been that other storm on the lake, and they woke Jesus up, And Jesus stood up and he rebuked the storm and it died down. They asked a question. They said, "What manner of man is this that the wind and the waves obey him?" They asked that question. Well, now they know the answer. And they say, "Truly, you're God. You're God. You're the Son of God. There's no doubt. You're God in the flesh." And those 11 men, now including a wet, soaking Peter, worshiped him. I think they got down on one knee and worshiped him. For the rest of their lives, they would believe in him. No matter what anybody might say, no matter what anybody might threaten, no matter what ugly words or ugly actions anybody might do, they were convinced of the truth. They had a conviction, Jesus is the Son of God. And every time that would be challenged, they just remember this story. We once had a night where Jesus walked on water. You know, it's thanks to Peter's little excursion that they get this truth. They get this proof. If he had not gotten out of the boat, none of those guys would have experienced this miracle. But they did experience it. They learned from it. They would learn that Jesus' power goes beyond his physical presence. They would learn that the way to victory is to keep your eyes on him. Years later, Peter the apostle would write a letter, and in that letter he'd quote an Old Testament scripture, and he'd say this, "For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer." His ears are always open to their prayer. His eyes are always on his children. God never takes his eyes off his kids. We may not see him, and we certainly may not feel him, but he's there. He's there with us. And we're challenged on that because sometimes we don't know. We don't understand. God, why is this happening? I promise you, step away from the pulpit to show you my humanness. I argued with God Friday. I was driving home from Hilton Head. My daughter had lost a court case. We thought that we prayed all week that she would win. I said, "God, I don't see you in this. I don't see you in this. I don't understand." And then I came home to read the sermon that I'd written before. Read this story. I say, "Okay, Lord, this was for me." This was for me. Yeah. Oh, amen. You know, I'm grateful for Peter. I really am. I find some hope in his example. Not his example of great faith, but because of his failures. Because of his, you know, Peter messed up a lot. He failed a lot. He failed big time. But he always got back up. He always turned to Jesus, and he always kept walking with Jesus. And God used him. In spite of his many, many, many mistakes, God used him. In spite of his many failures, God did great things through him. And maybe there's an example of hope for us. You don't have to be a perfect Christian for God to use you. You just have to be human. Just keep coming back to God's mercy and keep focusing at God's strength. Keep looking at Jesus. Because God has chosen to use imperfect people to accomplish his perfect will. God uses flawed servants. God uses flawed servants. Therefore, there's some hope for me and for you. Oftentimes, God comes to us in an unexpected way. Jesus certainly came to these disciples in an unexpected way. They thought he was a ghost. God works in our lives in mysterious ways. He intervenes in unexpected twists and turns. We only see what's ahead of us. He can see 20, 30, 40 steps ahead. He might appear as an unexpected event. He might appear in an unexpected help of an unexpected person. He might even speak to us in a message from church. He comes unannounced. Sometimes softly and sometimes very vividly. But God does show up. You know, there's no greater prayer than what Peter prayed when he went in the water. He said, "Lord, save me." Now, that's not a fancy prayer. There's no great theology in that. That's a desperate prayer, isn't it? And did you know that's the prayer that we can always pray? I've shared with you before that my favorite line in Psalm 23 is the line that David wrote, and he restores my soul. He restores my soul. Because oftentimes you can't value that till you feel like your soul's lost. I don't mean lost theologically. I don't mean lost in damnation, theological word. I mean lost in discouragement, lost in confusion, lost in concern and worry. It's then we have to look to Jesus, and He restores our soul. That's why it's so valuable. Lord, save me is a prayer that a person comes to Jesus for the first time. Lord, save me is a prayer that as Christians, as God's children, we have to pray quite often because we don't know what else to say. Lord, I'm in this predicament. Lord, save me. Work this out. Lead me, Lord. I'm yours. So as we conclude this story, may we follow the words of the writer of Hebrews when he said this, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Looking to Jesus. May we have the courage to look at Him, keep our eyes on Him. Sometimes even get out of the boat, however that applies. Let's bow for prayer.